Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM, right in the middle of your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we're going to talk about an issue that's come up quite a bit recently with people. We're going to talk about physical attractiveness, physical beauty. And I have here in the studio with me Dr. Kent Robert Shaw, psychiatrist who's worked a great deal with people in the theater, actresses, people who've had issues related to their beauty one way or another.
Nice to be here today.
Yeah. So listen, let me start this off with, you know, in a series of early Dilbert comic strips, the male staff members in Dilbert's office was sent to attend a sensitivity training where they were asked to imagine that they were women, visualize what their life would be like, and describe what they experienced. So you could just picture this in a Dilbert comic strip. The report along the lines of, "People smile at me for no reason," said the guys. "Doors were held open. I received friendly offers of help and special favors." Now, of course, they were totally missing the intended point of the exercise, but they refused to eliminate the visualization of the session. They said, "No, I'm never going back," which was the punchline of the joke. "I'm never going back to another way. I always want to imagine myself to be an attractive woman." Wouldn't that be nice? A researcher at the University of Alberta has shown that parents are more likely to give better care and pay closer attention to good-looking children compared to unattractive ones. Dr. Andrew Harrell, presenting his findings in 2005 based on an observational study of children and shopping cart safety, that they gave more attention to good-looking children in a shopping cart safety study. Get that, Kent?
Sure.
Who leaves the baby unattended?
Yeah, I think it's just such a very powerful part of our brain that, you know, is part of our animal selves, you know, that we're really somewhat, you know, hardwired to a degree. There's lots of social and cultural and family and otherwise influences, but there's lots of research that the animal part of our brain really actively seeks out, looks at the face, looks at the body, looks at others, and responds often in a positive way to those that register some feeling of beauty, attractiveness, and the like. And it's all over all different sexes, all different ages.
What percentage of the population would be considered beautiful? You think it's like 5%?
I think everyone's beautiful.
No, I know. No. Come back to what we're doing.
Okay.
I know you do.
But in terms of, you know, strikingly beautiful to the point...
No, just plain beautiful. Beautiful, you look at, I would say about 5% of the population. Strikingly beautiful, gorgeous, you know, movie star stuff. It's one out of a thousand maybe. But 5% I think is good for the very beautiful. Or what do you think?
I would say it's a little higher, but I would say it's
6%.
You know, more than 5%. Yeah, I think it's a little bit higher than that.
Okay, so now, what about the other 95% of us? And this is a question. What about the rest of the people who have to deal with that image being there, getting the value it gets? Let's go look at a little more research. Another team of researchers found that 1.2% of the least attractive children were buckled into these shopping carts compared with 13% of the attractive youngsters. So that's kind of interesting. The observers noticed that the less attractive children were allowed to wander freely away, while the more attractive children were kept closer to home by their parents. In 1987, a study by Judith Lengua, a psychology professor at the University of Texas, published in Developmental Psychology, she showed that infants as young as 2 months preferred to look at pretty faces. So they showed infants, and then they showed infants people, And when the infant looked at the unattractive faces, it wasn't as comfortable when it looked as that which is considered an attractive face. And an attractive face, by most standards, is one that is in balance, where there's a harmony between the right side and the left side. That's generally seen as what's attractive, but pretty is pretty, you know, full lips and high cheeks and whatever pretty is to the world.
Beauty is as beauty does, or something.
Two economists of the University of Colorado tracked the life course of young people from high school throughout early adulthood, and they found that the unattractive individuals, the ones at the lower end, the lower 15% of attractivity, committed more crimes in comparison to average-looking people, and very attractive individuals commit significantly less crime compared to those of average-looking. That seems to make sense, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, that they're feeling, if again, a perception that people have of themselves that they're well-liked and or found attractive by others somehow gives them a sense of good feelings, good self-esteem, a sense that the world is my oyster and I have opportunities. And I would think the opposite, sadly, is true for many people whose sense of self and self-esteem is feeling lesser, that I'm less attractive than I should be to be happy and accepted by others. And that's going to send people into a dark place of I don't fit in this society and I need to do whatever it takes to get what I want, whether it's criminal behavior or the like, because I'm not going to be afforded the opportunity to be happy because I'm not attractive enough to be happy.
Well, if we use, you know, it's a good point, Kent, because if we use the evidence of the parents liking their more attractive children better and protecting their more attractive children better, then a non-attractive child, or one that is not attractive compared to their brothers or sisters, is in effect trying to get that same love from their parents that they can't get because they're not pretty. So therefore, somebody who steals is in effect trying to steal their parents' love. Mm-hmm. And the thing they want to steal is they want to steal something that makes them feel like they're more deserving of love. So a petty theft is really a pretty theft. They're trying to steal beauty. They're trying to steal. They want to be as pretty as anybody else, and they want to get the love and admiration that everyone else gets. And I notice that with people who do scofflaw, people who cheat, people who cheat a lot, and they're always trying to beat the system. They basically feel physically unattractive. And it's tough to feel physically unattractive. Some people feel physically unattractive even when they're not, right?
Yeah, I mean that, well, again, Marilyn Monroe thought she was ugly, and anorexics go around thinking that they're fat and unattractive. But certainly, psychiatrically, there's a syndrome of body dysmorphic disorder that many people have, maybe not in its most severe form, but a real perception that there's something wrong with their appearance. They usually focus on one or two things: their nose, their ears, their weight, their height, their hair, something like that. They'll focus on something about themselves that makes it so they're not as beautiful and as aesthetically pleasing as they'd like to be. And for that reason, they feel not as comfortable, not as confident, not as successful as they should. And they focus in and obsess all day long about this part of their body that's not good enough.
You know, and it is a form of obsessive-compulsive disorder. It is treatable. But the people who feel it, they also feel a great deal of shame. You know, it could be anything. And then I know people who go for plastic surgery to correct one part of their body, and then they have this bouncing, we should make this a diagnostic term, bouncing body dysmorphia, which means when you get one thing fixed, you go to another thing and you find a problem with that, and then you get another thing, you get another thing, problem with that. And nowadays, with plastic surgery available, you could just keep finding things wrong with you. But it never cures the problem.
Yeah, I think that
bouncing body dysmorphia.
Yeah, I think that you know, sadly, people you know, come out of their childhoods, their family experience, their peer experience. We haven't even talked about what happens in school in terms of how people are then rated and how there's a hierarchy that is based on things like who is perceived as more attractive than someone else. People come out of this feeling lesser than, feeling like there's something wrong with their appearance, and it's a pretty powerful sense of self that develops. And yes, that's the problem. It's just this internalized sense that there's something not attractive about me. And yes, if you just fix one part of it, that the internal belief system that's developed by years and years of sense of self and the feedback from people around doesn't go away. And it's really the core is to try to get at that feeling that of acceptance and feeling good enough.
This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. We're talking about physical beauty. Physical beauty, if you have it, and if you don't have it, how you feel about it. In cute guys, very attractive men, are less likely than average to commit 7 crimes, including burglary, selling drugs, while the unattractive, those considered unattractive, are more likely to have broken the law. Very attractive high school women were less likely to commit crimes, while those rated unattractive were more likely to have done so, which reminds me of another study I saw about, you know, it might be kind of hard to understand why young women want to be cheerleaders. I mean, young men too, but young women want to be cheerleaders. It sounds like it's for the exercise or the gymnastics, but I think it's a test of attractivity. I don't think you're allowed to be a cheerleader if you're not attractive. Is that true?
Oh, definitely. I think that, you know, there's supposedly, I guess, athletic prowess and some kind of team spirit. But the great unsaid, I believe, in high schools is that the cheerleading squad is some of the more attractive people in the school. And let's get to the ultimate, obviously, which is somebody is voted homecoming queen and homecoming king. So I would assume in high schools around the world, there is this sort of, you know, this vote about who is the most beautiful in the school. And that means everyone else, you're not good enough. You know, if you're not the homecoming queen or the homecoming king of your school or class couple, then you're lesser than. You're number two. And number two is feces, right? Two and below, if you're not the most.
If other studies have shown that unattractive men and women are less likely to be hired, you know, get jobs, they earn less money than their better-looking people. They also report that more attractive students have better grades and more polished social skills are favored by teachers, and they graduate with a better chance of staying out of trouble. So right from the beginning, there it is. You know, we see them on TV, we see them on the streets, we even have to live with them on a daily basis. Flawless skin, the perfect jawbones, the captivating smiles, not to mention the drop-dead gorgeous bodies. And then there's the other thing that comes along with it. You see these beautiful people, and they've got great morals. They're meek. They're kind. They're selfless. They have it all. These are the ones who are blessed with beauty. As women, we look on and hope their faces will break out. As men, we wish that there would be something that would allow us to be attracted to them. It's kind of an unhappy thing because, you know, there's this thing. Just last month, you know, it was Michelle Pfeiffer told Allure magazine that her beauty was more of a curse than a blessing. And she says this frequently, you know, she says frequently that she wishes she were not so beautiful. I'm sure if she weren't, she might not say it. But Michelle has said that she has to work harder than everybody else to make people believe she could act. And in one of her movies, I remember, Frankie and Johnny, she was criticized by put down by the critics as being too beautiful for the part, too attractive for the part. So the point of it is you have to work harder to prove yourself if you're attractive, if you want people to see you other than beautiful, other than, if you want them to value. So other people, the former Miss World, Jamaica's most beautiful woman, Lisa Hanna, she says you have to work harder than everyone else to prove yourself. many people are of the opinion that you don't have anything to contribute and you have to prove them wrong when you're beautiful. Hannah noted also that opportunities might even be denied those considered beautiful because some people think that a person who is that attractive is going to give me trouble. They're going to put him in my office, and they're going to attract a crowd around them, and the men are going to compete, and it's so we don't want to have her in the room. So some people think that it's to your disadvantage to be really attractive. The beautiful title can really work against you. On the other hand, you know, she also believes that doors have been opened for her, with her outward appearance being a contributing factor. Doors open easy for beautiful people. I mean, you know, if someone knocks at your door and you look at them and they're beautiful, you're probably going to take the chain off the door. You know, and I remember once, this is a great example of it. I think I was 21 years old, I went to a football game. I was a big guy, 250 pounds, 6'4". And we went with a bunch of guys out to New Jersey there, to the stadium. And I lost them on the way back. And with them, I lost them, and I couldn't find them, and I couldn't find my car. And it was so hot that day. I was sweaty. I was wrecked. And I'm a fairly decent-looking guy, but I was a wreck. I mean, I was dusty and dirty. And I went up to everyone, and I asked them for a ride back to New York because I couldn't find my friends. But they took a look at me, and they said, no, we can't give you a ride. And I said, why can't you give me a ride? They said, because, you know, how do we know that you're not going to hurt us? And I realized that if I were thin and beautiful and said, I need a ride back to New York, it would have been real easy. It must have taken me 2 hours to get people to drive me back to New York who would believe that I were a decent guy instead of somebody who could hurt them. So beauty is usually not associated with someone who could hurt you, but yet on the other hand, beauty and psychopathy often go together.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that they make fun of these kinds of things, like the movies, like Mean Girls and Heathers and the like. There's a whole genre of movies that people know that they've had this experience of somebody in their high school or somebody growing up who is blessed with tremendous beauty. And for that reason, there's a great quote by E.M. Forrester that beauty has its own rules, that these people seem to not feel that they need to be kind or considerate or live by the golden rule, that they have a sense of entitlement, that they get special rules. And the truth is what we're talking about. The truth, the reality is that often people who are particularly beautiful, they will be overlooked for, you know, behaviors and comments and things that other people would mainly see as very petty, very superficial, very mean-spirited. And yet they are allowed to function like this because they still have power, and power over people of both sexes because of their beauty. And I think one of the things that people who are very beautiful realize is they have a certain power over people. And I believe that, like many things, absolute, you know, power can corrupt absolutely. For some people, that can go to their head and feel, you know, that I'm special in some way. I'm different. Again, it almost dovetails with Nietzsche's idea of the Übermensch, the Superman, that somehow I'm better than the average person, you know. And obviously this led to the Third Reich and Nazism, that sense that superior people get different rules. We have special rules. We don't have to live by the normal rules because we're demigods. We're better than. And so we get a certain sense of treating people in a way that normal-looking people don't have to. You know, they have to subscribe to those rules. We, the better people, get special rules.
You know, on one hand, and of course many people do exactly that, Kent. They feel superior in that way. And then on the other hand, you can meet many of the very attractive people who vap. Very attractive people. In denial. Vapid. V-A-P-I-D. But very attractive people very often will become some of the saints of the world. Because if you think about it, you know, if you've already won all the contests, if everybody looks at you with such admiration and charm, and you just, you know, everybody kind of surrenders to you. It's easy to be graceful, to be giving, to know that you're safe. You don't have to defend yourself. So I think equally you can be the most graceful person, or you could be the most entitled, narcissistic person. Truth of it is, the people who I think take the position that you're talking about feeling privileged, I think they may be attractive, but they don't believe they're attractive. I think that they are still proving their point. When meanness goes with attractiveness, I think the attractiveness is dubious. Whereas if I think a person's kindness goes with their attractiveness, then I think the attractiveness may run a little deeper than the skin. So I think when I talk about psychopathy and attractiveness, there are men, and I know when a man is very attractive, he tends to skate by. Now, if he goes through a school system where he can get his credentials and become an attorney and, you know, everywhere he goes, he's got a point of success, unless it's theater, of course, because there's too much competition. But wherever he goes, he would be graced a little bit. But now, unfortunately, he notices that he could take certain shortcuts, that he doesn't have to study for the exam, that he doesn't have to do all the work. And little by little, he ignores the social mores and the social needs, and he begins to believe he doesn't have to pay attention to what the real demands of the society are, and eventually believes that he has a right, just based on his attractiveness, to defy all rules. And this becomes the person who becomes the most dangerous. Because when they become politicians, as many do, you know, many politicians are attractive, and they're based on the fact that they were elected because they were attractive. You know, the young ones, when they're elected, when they're nominated to House of Representatives and Senate, those attractive people who take their charm and start using it in a certain way can become very dangerous characters. Give me an unattractive president. You know what I mean? Give me somebody who doesn't have looks and I might feel a little safer, you know? So,
yeah, I think that, you know, when you get to the word charm, you know, you're really talking about the social sort of interaction that we have in the outside world. And yes, a lot of people can develop very superficial, charming sort of ways of interacting and making people feel very good and they use their beauty to charm people. But as we as therapists see that a lot of these people, when they're by themselves or they're just around people that they feel comfortable with, you know, the beauty, that superficial beauty wears off, I would argue, with long-term friendships and work relationships and certainly in one's home life, you know, then it really gets to some of the more spiritual or deeper sort of truths of what's important and what's beautiful in terms of whether you're kind, whether you're thoughtful, whether you listen, whether you communicate, whether you have care and concern. So again, there's a lot of salesmen, there's a lot of politicians that on very quick, superficial kind of encounters, maybe just having a nice business meal over a few drinks, can be quite charming and look very beautiful. But long term, a lot of these people, when they get into their real relationships, the darkness about their personality then comes out.
We had someone here recently who was a stripper for a living, and she talked about, I think she did it off camera, she talked about how when she would work at a place like Scores, she would be among 100 pole dancers, all who were some of the most attractive women in the world. I mean, they were all beyond attractive, as well as having implants and everything. They were just gorgeous. And she she said it was unusual to be among so many beautiful people, because usually she was the one beauty who stood out. Now, when you stand around and you're with 100 women who are equally as attractive, even if you're standing in the waiting room, even if you're standing before the show, it's kind of mind-boggling because, hey, wait a minute, I always stood out. I'm always the one who everybody looks at, and here everybody else is attractive. And she said it was mind-boggling. Now, we're going to take your calls after our break because we want to hear from you about your experience with beauty. Now, first of all, do you consider yourself to be in that 5 or 10% of the most beautiful? And if you do, how has that affected you? And if you're not, how has it affected you? And what is your attitude and what is your relationship to physical beauty? We're going to continue with this in a couple of minutes with you. Because, you know, true beauty, I mean, what defines true beauty? Peter, in the Bible, says, your beauty should not come from outward adornments such as braided hair and the wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothing. Instead, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. But then again, you know, King Solomon had a different view. He said, oh, yes, but celebrate the fair dove's eyes and the scarlet lips. So, I mean, he was, you know, show me the pretty ones. Now, you always hear the term beauty in the eyes of the beholder, but promoter of the Miss America beauty pageant, Euton James, said, when you look at something and it's pleasing, then the beauty of it is obviously going to please other people. Just, it's that simple. Beauty's not just in the eyes of the beholder, but beauty does seem to share some pleasure. But at the same time, if you have a pleasing outside but lack charisma and you walk into a room, nobody sees you without charisma. Whether that beauty is the glow of the skin, the shining in your eyes, wherever it may be, you also need charisma. Charisma easily comes with physical beauty, but if for some reason you don't have charisma, along with your physical beauty is unnoticed. Beauty, though, is not a matter of the shape of your nose nor the color of your eyes. It encompasses everything. Some people will judge persons' beauty by the type of looks they possess. What you need to do is judge against the same race, because within the same race or within the same culture, people are going to be very attractive. In some cultures, very heavy is very attractive. In some cultures, very thin is very attractive. Different people depict different types of looks. But anybody can be beautiful within a certain set of beings. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll play you a little music, and then we will continue and take your phone calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Everything is beautiful in its own way, like a starry summer night or a snow-covered winter's day. Don't worry about what
instant. Ray Stevens. Everything is beautiful. You know, you just sometimes. It's just right there in front of you.
Oh, yeah, that song, boy, that brings back a lot of good memories.
Good memories, you know. But now let's talk up to the people and see what they have to say. 212-209-2900. What is it to you? You know, how do you survive a world where beauty comes first? You know, somebody, if you grow up having children, having sisters and brothers that are more attractive than you, boy, that's really rough, don't you think?
That's an ouch, man. That's a big ouch. I think, again, just to broaden it a little bit, you know, whether it's academics, whether it's athletics, whether it's beauty, maybe that's like the SAT score of English and math are some big categories that are very important to 7 through 17 years old. And if you're lesser than a sibling, then that gets in your head, you know, that I'm never going to be as talented as my sister. I'm never going to be beautiful like my brother. I'm never going to be smart like my, you know, my brother. And that gets in people's sense of self as not good enough.
Yeah. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, DeMille. How are you doing today?
Good.
This is my first time calling.
Oh, well, welcome to WBAI, and congratulations for picking up a phone and being part of a listening audience.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
I happen to be one of the individuals that feel very low. I have very low self-esteem based on my looks.
Yeah, you think that you're not attractive, right?
Absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, I could feel it in people's eyes, how they look at me when I walk and when I'm in the neighborhood and when I'm... My whole body tells me that.
And what would you tell me if you were to pick out a part of your body? What's your name, by the way? Give me a first name.
My name's Richard.
Richard, so if you were to pick out one part of you that people look at and find unattractive, do you think it's your face, your body?
Absolutely.
What do you think it is?
My face. Well, and I have a disfigurement.
And what is that?
I have what's called vitiligo.
Vitiligo.
Yes.
Right, with the skin discoloration.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and now that is, people will look at that and they will see that as something that is striking to them. But now I've got to tell you something about that. I treated two cases of people with vitiligo, and they both had this thing, and one of them was a man, and I'm sure he's even listening. I know he's a very good, he's a big fan of our station. He had such a sense of pride about himself that he wore this, what you call disfigurement, this thing, as kind of, okay, everybody, I know you want to look at it. Now, after you're done looking at it, I want you to see the smile that's on my face. And somehow his attitude developed to such a point where it was not that sense that he got about himself, that people are looking at him only as ugly, but he knew people were staring at him. So there's something about the internal attitude that needs to be developed. Do you tend to be an isolationist? Do you tend to be alone? Do you tend to kind of live by yourself, or do you hang out with people?
Well, due to this inconvenient facial figure, yes, I do tend to be solo and be very... I don't go out very much because I feel very uncomfortable. So.
Okay, so if you could find a place where you could go where you would feel comfortable, would you go to that place?
Possibly, yes.
You know, like if you go to a movie, nobody's staring at you. But
that's what I do because that's in the dark. You know, I don't got to be seen.
Now, what if you went to a place that was a group of people with vitiligo?
Uh-huh.
Would you go to that group?
Subconsciously, probably not, because I would be looking at myself and that image would be planted in my mind and I would feel uncomfortable, not knowing how to break through that, what I feel at that moment. Maybe I possibly will, but I don't know.
Because, you know, it's worth
searching.
Let me tell you what I've found. Not with the one particular person, but it's worth searching out if there is such a thing, because what we usually judge in other people is what we see in ourselves. And when somebody who is got something that's odd, like a disfigurement or something like that, and you look at them as a person and you see the person, once you see the person, that doesn't become the most obvious thing anymore. So I think for you, you have to be comfortable, learn to be comfortable somewhere in public. And how do we get you to be comfortable in public, to be in a place where you don't feel judged? Like, for example, if you went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, you would not be judged. Absolutely. You would be not among people who would look at you and say, hello, brother, you're one of us. If you went to any of the meetings, you know, any of these 12-step meetings, they welcome you right in without judgment. They judge nobody. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's a way. Your goal has got to be to practice getting yourself into the world. Mm. And that's a thing that you have to use as your own project. And that you could do by searching the internet, finding what groups there are, and just finding yourself getting out there and getting a therapist if you need one to support you, to help you feel strong enough to get out there. Because what you're saying is not true. You are not ugly. You just have vitiligo.
True. Well, you know, talk back to the beauty part and the ugly. You know, you lose a lot of confidence as an individual. And based on that confidence, when you do apply for certain positions, they're just not there, because even though your skills are sharp enough to have that, they do not make that happen because of what you represent and what they want to represent based on the job that you're looking for.
I understand.
So it's very, very sad. But I've been there, and I know that, and that's a fact.
So when you go for a job, do you let your employer, prospective employer, know that you have vitiligo?
Based on the interview. Well, on the interview, you could tell just by eye contact. Just like a black man can tell if a person's prejudiced, I can tell their prejudice by the way they look at me.
Sure. But you don't tell them in advance that you have this.
No, of course not.
Why, of course not?
Well, I mean, it's like your resume. You put it there, they read it, and when you represent, to come to the interview, altogether, their attitude's altogether different.
Yeah, no, I understand. I was just curious as to how it's handled, because sometimes I know people would say, and by the way, I want you to know that I wear an eye patch.
No.
And I wear an eye patch, you know, so that when I walk in, I don't want you to just be staring at my eye patch.
I'm hoping that my resume represents me.
Yeah.
But 90% of the time, it doesn't. Yeah. They're looking for the image, just like the gentleman was saying. So very, very, you know, overwhelming sometimes, and you got to take a deep breath and say, wow, you know, I have skills, but that's not what they're looking for.
Richard, you have an awful lot of sensitivity and a lot of personal insight, and I hope you do take a chance and get out there a little more, but you're a very brave guy, and I appreciate you, and especially appreciate you being a new caller to WBAI.
Well, actually, this is a wonderful benefit to be in your presence and even to say hello. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thanks so much, Richard.
All right. Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Armando Mill, hi. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello. Yes.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, talk.
Hi, Armand. Thank you so much for the program. I appreciate it very much. And I can relate with the team today, because I'm one of four girls. We are six, but from the four girls, I am the second one, and the first one is the most beautiful.
Your oldest sister is the most beautiful.
Yes, she's five years older than me, and she's the one who gets all the attention. And yet, her personality is like, unfortunately, she doesn't believe that she's beautiful. So she is a mix of, how can I tell you? So my focus is that the true beauty is the one that goes beyond the physical. But I encounter that for most people, the physical is the first, the what counts.
Yes, for most people. So when you're walking down the street with your sister, and an attractive man comes walking down the street, where are his eyes going to go?
I know. Oh, automatically, it goes to her.
Why? I mean, how does that really feel? Tell me what that's like.
For me, it's like I don't exist. You know, in order for them to notice me, it will take them more time. Or how can I tell you this? Like I say, the focus is not, it doesn't have to be on the physical in my situation.
Why doesn't it have to be on the physical?
Well, I consider myself cute because that's how some people call me.
You're cute, but your sister is beautiful, right? And you walk down the street with your sister, and your sister automatically gets people attracted to her. So you developed mechanisms to be cute and be attractive to people, and you developed your own style of doing it. I bet you're funny. I bet you tell jokes.
You're right, Armand. I have a different personality, but I think it's such a shame that so many people focus on the pure physical when we are skipping something much more important. Because I noticed that beautiful people sometimes they could be spoiled, and right now I notice it with my niece. She's beautiful and she gets all this attention, and many people don't point out when she, you know, misbehaves.
Yes, so you would like them to, I imagine.
I wonder if you have a feeling that your life would be better today if you were as beautiful as your sister. Is there like a pain inside that feels like I would like to be who I am with my values, with my cuteness, with my better evolved sense of my personality, and have the magical feeling and be as beautiful as my sister? Do you sometimes feel that?
No, not really. I admire her because I can see also her beauty in the personality. She's generous. She could be a beautiful person, you know, a whole person. But I noticed that all her attention mainly is on her. And unfortunately, she doesn't, her relationships with men or with women don't last that long.
Yeah, they can't, because there's not, you know, you have to get to a certain level of depth, and she's not familiar with that level of depth.
Exactly.
What about you? Do you have relationships that last a long time?
No, because unfortunately, it will take me some time for me to really trust somebody now.
Why have
so
you been
for
hurt?
Me, it's a matter of time.
Have you been
and
hurt
earning
deeply?
The trust. I'm sorry?
Have you been hurt deeply? Because now you tell me both you and your sister have this thing in common. Neither of you have long-term relationships. So I imagine that the problem goes a little further back to your family.
You are right.
Yeah.
You are right. It goes beyond that.
And what was the big crime in your family? What was the big harm?
Well, it has to do a lot with abuse.
Abuse.
In every way of abuse, you know, physical, sexual, and verbal.
Yeah. So you had a father who was like kind of a nasty guy?
Well, I had a stepfather who represented that. And unfortunately, my mom drugs a lot of abuse. We're just learning lately, but now it makes sense to me why things have happened in the family. So there is also some kind of embarrassment in my part.
Yes, I understand. Embarrassment in your part, some shame on your part?
From the shame that the family drugs. And nobody wants to focus and deal with that. And I am the only one who wants to, like, put the puzzle together, understand the history of the family, deal with the facts, and give myself a chance to see what a life has to offer, you know.
Well, you seem like you've taken a big step. Were you sexually abused by your stepfather?
No, thank God, no. But verbally, yes.
Verbally abused. And what about your your sister?
And physical.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that my sister did too, but
and
they don't talk about these things.
They're really mean to you, huh? Really mean to you.
And I noticed, and that's what I want to work on. But overall, I appreciate your program, because I think these issues, we really have to talk more about these issues. And
noticed what? What did you notice? You were saying, tell me that. You noticed, and I understand your feelings, and you don't have to rush. You don't have to rush, because the pain that you're showing me now would have been hard to see if we just listened to your words. But sometimes I hear beyond the words, and I hear a child who suffered deeply, not only because she had an attractive sister, but her sister suffered deeply. And the two of you are so wounded, and you're turning around and you're trying to get people to say, please, let's talk about it, because if we put it out in the open, maybe we can get over it. But I'm sure the rest of your family and your mother, you know, says, no, 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 we don't have to look back on this anymore. And it's killing you on the inside. Is that true?
I'm sorry, Herman, I didn't hear that well, because this is very low here on my cell.
Yes.
But anyway, I don't want to take much of your time. I appreciate your program.
And you know, the part of you that doesn't believe you're entitled to much of my time is directly related to the part of you that was abused verbally as a child. You're entitled to all the time you want.
Thank you so much, but...
Yeah, I hear.
That's why I want to know, at this point of my life, how do I go the rest of my life? You see?
I think at this point, you're at the point where psychotherapy and having somebody there who can really help you purge these deep emotions, not just sit around and talk, but somebody who does very intense, deep work, because I could hear your emotions are right at the surface, and we have to dip all the way down into the bottom of them. You have to get all the way down to those childhood experiences, and you're right at that point now where I believe you could do it. And I believe the people who do that really do the very best, most effective work. And if you want to get in touch with somebody, just, you know, call my office and I'll let you know who I know who does that. What's your first name?
Maria.
Maria, thank
yes.
you for calling. Thank you for sharing your heart. You know, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. 212-209-2900. So do you wonder, my friends, do you wonder, is the pain there under the surface at every moment with every person who calls? 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Armand DeMille, hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello.
Yes.
How you doing? It's Jacob from Montclair, New Jersey.
Hi there, Jacob.
Jacob.
Jake.
How you doing?
Jake.
Yeah.
Is it my Jake?
I've talked to you before.
Yes, hi, Jake. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Tell me about you.
Tell me about me. I was going to talk about something else, basically, why we always... You know, you said something about the hierarchy of, you know, beauty and who's beautiful and who's not and who fits in what percentage. That hierarchy we know is not real, so why do we make it real?
Isn't it amazing? And not only we make it real, but all the animals make it real.
Right, right.
And nature makes it real, and plants make it real. There is a hierarchy.
So you're saying the reaction to the hierarchy, which is illusionary, it should be identified and then dealt with.
Well, I don't know if you could deal with it very much. I think what you've got to do is acknowledge the fact that the good-looking people get the goodies.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we just got to accept that the better-looking you are, the more goodies you're going to get. And that's the way it works. And that's okay. Just like, Kent, what was it, the study you were talking about, the wealthiest people? It's like it's the better-looking people and the wealthiest people, right?
Yeah, I think that, again, a lot of these people certainly harbor a lot of feelings about, am I likable, you know, underneath all this? You know, one of the curses of being very beautiful or very successful or financially very well off is that people gravitate towards you. And I find a lot of people that I see and come to my office, they struggle with the idea of whether these people would like me if I wasn't so beautiful, or whether they would still want to hang out with me if I wasn't the CEO of a company and could do something for them. So there's a lot of insecurity sometimes and a lot of self-doubts that people have, whether the core me, which they know is my personality, my warmth, my humanness, whether they would still like me if I weren't so beautiful or so powerful.
But my point was that in each society, that is imagined. In other words, each society has a different arbiter for that
hierarchy.
Absolutely,
Jake.
So
where do you fit on the spectrum? What do you think?
I knew you were going to get to that.
How did you think I was going to get to
that? That's what I was trying to avoid. where would I call it? Dead center.
You think you're an average-looking guy.
That's
But wait,
say.
With your personality, you're no average-looking guy. I'll bet you're very popular.
I get around.
You know, but I mean it. I mean, you see, what you've done is dead center with a vibrant, intelligent personality that has on the edge of it a hint of anger that sometimes sends people away. There's a piece of you that's caustic. And then there's another piece of you that is very charming. So you have this kind of combination. Now, I'll bet it's very difficult for you to find somebody for a long-term relationship beyond 3 years.
3 years. That would probably be a good measuring point.
My guess would be most of your relationships last 3 years, 1 month, and 14 days.
I'm getting overdue right now, I can tell you that.
But, you know,
I'm getting close.
Is it hard to trust people?
No, it's basically hard. You know, it's always about self, you know, so it's basically learning to trust yourself and seeing myself in you. So it's basically, you know, what I was trying to say before is a hierarchy imagine and then skip a step and don't make it real. So I know you deal all the time with the reality of the problem. All I was trying to say with my input was to say we make it real and then try to deal with the problem. The hierarchy doesn't exist in any hierarchy of beauty, of social goals, or
Jake,
of wealth.
Jake, do you can you love yourself yet?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And we're heading on like 3 years. It might even be over 3 years right now, 11 days and 14 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
On that day, on 3 years, 11 days and 14 minutes, I want you to have a celebration.
Yeah.
Because the two of you deserve something really special. Sounds like you're a really good guy.
My birthday's coming up on Sunday, so we'll be...
Is it on Sunday? Happy birthday to you, Jake. What a wonderful thing. And thank you for calling in so I could say that to you.
Thanks a lot, Armand.
All right, I'll speak to you again.
Love you, man.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Kent Robertshaw. Kent, I'm sure we could talk about this for hours. It's amazing, don't you think?
It's a huge subject. It affects everybody.
Yeah, so I will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. I will bring you more stuff because it's such exciting to be able to get you back on air with me. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. If you wanted to get a copy of today's show or to hear the program, you could go to thepositivemind.com or you could send an email to armand@thepositivemind.com. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m.